ebook publishers and marketing services company, Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, your favorite fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes, PRX, and right here locally on KSKQ 89.5 FM, Ashland, Oregon, art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $9.99 per month. And be sure to check out our new book rental program. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, Canada's top comic, Joe Crawford, says,
"You were supposed to get the smokes, eh?"
Audi winner Adele Park's new audiobook has people saying, "Godzooks!" And the mystery of the runaway man in our Downpour.com special feature, right after the news you want to know. All my time,
Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
Hi, I'm Carson Bench. I'm the program director for KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon. Director Steven Spielberg. He is reportedly interested in revisiting the director's chair for an Indiana Jones reboot that could see Guardian of the Galaxy's Chris Pratt take up a titular role, according to Deadline. But Spielberg's interest in the project, which is said to be in the very early stages of development, is believed to depend on finding a suitable script. Reports of Pratt taking the lead role reared their head earlier this year, with rumors that Disney was looking to revive the franchise. Disney bought the rights to the franchise from Paramount in 2013. Paramount Pictures distributed the most recent film in the series in 2008, and the largely terrible Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Rumors have surrounded Disney since the purchase, with both Bradley Cooper and Chris Hemsworth previously touted for the lead of the Indiana Jones revival. The company has yet to confirm or deny anything. A new addition to the much-loved series is still likely a few years away, as Pratt will star in the next Jurassic World, which Spielberg is also executive produced.
That's pretty cool. You know what? I would like to see Bradley Cooper as the next Indiana Jones.
Well, I'd like to talk about Chris Pratt. Now, here's a guy that is really having a transformation in his career. I think most people became familiar with him from the popular TV show called Parks and Rec. And he was, plays a very goofy, childish man-child. He was a little pudgy. And, and he had to really get in shape for the Guardians of the Galaxy. And now he just seems to be like this hot commodity for the hero role.
And his whole career is by luck. You know, he was in Hawaii as a waiter when he got picked up by a director who was directing a movie. We talked about this on the show before. So, he must be doing like a whirlwind, right now.
Well, was he like reading the specials and the director says, "I just like the
pretty
way
much,
you do
it"? Yeah, he just cast him right there.
Let me tell you.
Now, that's a Hollywood story.
He was on the beach in Hawaii. He was a surf bum. Director saw him, approached him, and he read for him. And they said, "Dude, you're good."
Wow. He's definitely got a unique personality. I would like to see him in more hero roles. The one thing, though, it doesn't seem like I'd ever be able to take him seriously as like a hardened character. You know, there's always going to be a little bit of good humor about him. It's just something about his face, I think, and the sound of his voice.
You know what, though? When you say that, I flash on, somebody we all lost and everybody loved, Robin Williams, you know, we always, you know, perceived him as a comic and comedy roles and stuff like that. But then when you saw the movies he did where he was a bad dude.
Yeah.
He pulled it off like nobody's business.
I guess that's a good actor for you.
Yeah.
Oh, he really is. Robin Williams, you know, undoubtedly a very good character actor. You know, another actor that he used to only see as, you know, who just himself that seemed to transform as John Cusack. You know, when he was doing all those 80s movies, it seemed like he's the same character over and over and over again. But the things I've seen him in most recently, he's kind of an evil, bad guy, and he really pulls it off.
There you go. Another example.
His sister's a pretty good actress too, Joan Cusack. But you know what, John Cusack, I just recently found out that there's a new movie coming out. It's called Love and Mercy, and it's the story of Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys.
Oh.
And they have a younger guy who plays, you know, Brian Wilson during the 60s, but John Cusack plays him as an older man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now that really intrigues me. That's something I'd like to see. Because the Beach Boys story is a really, really interesting story, in my opinion.
You know what? You know, Beach Boys story to me is like they are so homogenized as this, you know, great American, you know, icon band, you know, we can do no wrong, you know, fun, you know, I get around and all this stuff.
Aren't they? I feel ignorant.
Yeah, but when you look at their real story, man, they were really dark. They were really into drugs.
You know, some of the brothers were hanging out with Charles Manson.
Okay, now I want to see that movie.
Yeah. More. Yeah, that was really something, you know.
Now, there was a lot of drugs involved with that band, and I guess people didn't know that. But that really was, I think, part of the demise and maybe one of the reasons that Brian Wilson kind of went off the deep end. So yeah. I'm really interested in hearing that. But, he's always been coming back. You know, he's done a few solo albums that
were fairly recent. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, back to Indiana Jones, you know, I mean, it's like how cool is that they're able to bring back this franchise? I mean, people loved, you know, Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. I mean, you know,
he's an archaeologist.
Yeah, it's so cool.
He's a professor. Right. He's got this whip.
Right. And because Harrison Ford got old, I mean, we're not allowed to watch those movies anymore. We got to only see the ones that they made. To be able to revamp it with a new character, a new actor.
They do that with James Bond.
Yeah, they do that with Batman.
There you go. Yeah. That's cool.
Well, here's another guy who could possibly play Indiana Jones. He's the right age, but apparently he's busy right now.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio. He's going out with Rihanna. He is, yeah.
Rihanna.
Yeah, so, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio just helped throw a star-studded birthday party for Rihanna, which is, you know, and a shindig took place at a Beverly Hills home and went past 4 a.m. I mean, really lavish setting. There's even balloons that spelled out her name. You know, she wore a great plunging dress, you know, and kept her dark locks down and slicked back. You know, it was just an amazing, almost Wolf of Wall Street kind of party, you know, for Rihanna. There was even a leopard print three-tier cake.
Actually, I saw it.
You saw it? What'd you think of it?
I saw on Instagram Angela Martini. She's an Albanian model, and she was at the party.
Uh-huh.
She did a little video and put it on her Instagram site, and it was of Rihanna blowing out the candles on the cake. So I was like, oh, awesome cake.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, leopard skin. You know, I don't think I've ever seen a leopard skin print cake or anything like that.
Just wait till your next birthday.
Maybe Leo will get you one. You know?
Yeah, but
you have to wear a dress like Rihanna.
Yeah, and you know what? I tell you what, it's just like this guy Leonardo is just—he is like the consummate bachelor. You know, he's like the new George Clooney. You know, George Clooney was always dating all these supermodels, and he never got married. Well, he finally got married now that he's in his 50s. But Leonardo DiCaprio, every time you turn around, he's with, you know, some, you know, swimsuit model or some singer, you know.
I can see why.
And yeah, and he's never been married, and I know all the women love him, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a good-looking guy, and he actually is a very good actor. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe, you know, maybe that'll be on his gravestone when he finally goes. His legacy of dating. This story that Maya has just blows my mind.
Well, yeah, no kidding. It is pretty funny. These days, between smartphones, social networks, and, you know, fitness wearables, people are tracking all parts of their lives and more. Speaking of gravestones, there is a really funny part of an art exhibit that happened recently at the Science Gallery Dublin. And it was in an exhibit called Life Logging. And it included, it like showed this tongue-in-cheek tombstone that showed how normal it is these days to be measured by what we do online. Think of a tombstone, you don't think of this, but these days it gets so much attention. So I saw a picture of one and it said, in loving memory of at Edward C. Stanton, 1965 to 2068, 3.2 million YouTube views, 3,099 Facebook followers, 672 Twitter followers, 60,590 calories consumed, 92% positive eBay feedback, 184 Tinder matches. Yeah. Well, actually, don't. I know that you're going to live to be 102, Charlie. But
well, yeah, that's I'm hoping to live till next year.
Well, no, according to this, you're going to live until 2064. So.
Oh, dang.
But it did show a really funny, this tombstone that is all about the ultimate irony of life logging, because that's these days such a big thing. We live and record everything we do, you know, smartphones, social networks, the fitness wearables, and Facebook, Twitter, and others can serve as a tool, really, when you think about it, for short-term genealogy. It allows future generations to scroll back through their relatives' thoughts and interests and seeing their photos and reading their writings once they pass away. And when you think about it, right now, with the generation that we're in, it hasn't happened yet, but inevitably, there are a number of accounts, blogs, images, and websites belonging to to users that are going to outnumber the ones who have passed away, are going to outnumber the ones who are living. And so Facebook recently updated the way that it handles the profiles of users who've died. An heir can be chosen when you're alive to look after your profile after you pass away. And it'll turn into a memorial page, and the friend can or the family can manage the request and change the profile.
And I think that's really hats off to them for doing that, because my nephew Jordan, he was a recon marine. He got killed in Afghanistan a few years ago, and his mother kept his Facebook page alive and as a memorial, and it's gone from first being really sad to just now people just, you know, when they think of him and they have, you know, pleasant thoughts, or like, you know, they remember something they did together, and it keeps his memory alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
And I'm wondering with the gravestone things, if they're going to like get rid of the actual stone and turn it into like an iPad tablet, right? You know? Yeah. And you can start scrolling through there, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
You can go visit
for virtual reality, and you can go back in time and say, yeah, remember that game, man?
Exactly.
We never did finish that game, Monopoly, and now we're going to finish it. You
know? Yeah. Totally.
It's amazing.
The exhibit in Dublin, that they had some other really funny things. It included this small celebrity tracker device, and it keeps tabs on Justin Bieber for a monthly subscription. It's like you can track him wherever he goes, and you can have a necklace on. You know how people do if they're an organ donor? This would be if you're a data donor, and if you once you pass away, you're going to donate your data like have it. So it's a really cool exhibit.
There's another one, Viber, I think. Charlie XCX. You can like do this kind of thing. You get her phone number or something. You can track her. You know, she sends constant updates about, you know, she went to lunch and stuff.
Is it real?
Supposedly. I know. She's promoting it. So.
Well, no, it does sound legit, too, because they do that on Facebook now, like in Instagram and
Twitter.
And on Twitter, they'll ask you, they'll say, you know, can we, how's this?
Can you track where you go?
Yeah. Can we track you where you go? Is it okay or not okay? And if you say okay, then it's like, you know, you went to the cabaret for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I put that on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then so I don't know if that would work out too good, you know, for Hugh Grant or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm paranoid enough as it is. I wouldn't want it. You know? <I'm> like,
phone.
I leave my cell phone at home when I go, you know, when I leave the house sometimes because, you know, I'm worried that people are tracking me.
Well, when I have a crush on someone, I like to track them and see what they're doing on Facebook and stuff. That would be helpful. I could just go see where they're eating lunch and happen to go to the same restaurant.
Yeah, and then you could text them and say, why are you at my front door? Oh, my gosh.
Well, in more technological news, Valve Steam's VR headset puts Oculus in sights. The ever-growing virtual reality space just gained some steam. Software maker Valve confirmed that it is debuting the first ever Steam VR headset at Game Developers Conference 2015 in early March, which will pit the company head-to-head with both Oculus Rift and Razer's new OS VR system. Details on Valve's VR platform are currently sparse, but the developer will be providing demos of the hardware in San Francisco from March 4th to March 6th. Valve also promises to show off a revamped Steam controller, as well as living room devices, which we presume to be Steam machines. Steam VR won't technically be Valve's first foray into the realm of virtual reality. Last year, the company showed off its Dota 2 prototype headset, which featured a 2160 by 1280 display and built-in motion tracking capabilities. We're not sure if Steam VR will sport similar features, but integrated motion control could help Valve's headset stand out in space. The prospect of gaming veteran Valve entering the VR realm is an exciting one, but fans have reason to not set their hopes too high. Back at the CES 2014, the company promised to revolutionize living room gaming with a variety of console-like Steam machines powered by Valve's Steam OS software, but we still have yet to see any of them to come to market. The recent Alienware Alpha console was designed to help the charge for Steam OS, but was instead released as a Windows-based machine. The VR market is becoming a sandbox more and more gaming giants want to play in. Peripheral company Razer recently debuted its OS VR, open-source virtual reality platform, which is designed to encompass a multitude of headsets, accessories, and operating systems. Sony will soon allow PS4 gamers to get fully immersed in their games with its Project Morpheus headset. While Oculus VR continues to fine-tune its PC-based Oculus Rift for an eventual consumer release. We'll be on the ground at GDC 2015, where we plan getting our heads inside every single VR headset on the show floor. Stay tuned for updates.
You know, that's kind of a fascinating story, Carson, because, you know, here's the deal. We have been following this Oculus.
Okay.
Because it's virtual reality headsets, right? And where you can see everything. And Facebook bought Oculus. And they bought them for billions and billions of dollars.
Okay.
And they said that they were going to do a couple of games. That's it. But now everyone's getting in on the action, right? But what Facebook is saying, what they want the virtual reality for is they're going to use it for health reasons and for flying and things like that, where you can actually learn to fly a plane wearing these headsets and, you know, wow, you're doing the controls, where you can be doing an operation. And they do this now. When they do an operation, they put a camera in. You're looking at virtual reality. You're not actually seeing that ligament or that bone. But you see it in the headset, and you can manipulate it.
That's a good way of learning, I can imagine. Because when I think of virtual reality, I don't really know everything that it could encompass. But when you're saying that, what a good learning tool.
Yeah, and they were going to use it with cars and with planes and the military and things like that. That's what they bought it for. They said, we might try a couple of games, but that's not what we bought it for. We bought it for it to better mankind.
You know, when I think of virtual reality and gaming, I think of somebody at home wearing some weird gloves and a headset, moving around oddly and all alone in their living room.
Yeah, but you know what? When you see these guys that get Oculus, right? And they are wearing these headsets, right? And they're maneuvering everything and they're flying planes.
I want to see you do that, Charlie. Will you do that for us sometime?
I will definitely do that. I will do that. I'm going to take Anna Steele. Anna Steele? Is that her name? I think it is. Anna Steele? Yeah. On a virtual reality trip on an airplane.
Charlie Tango.
Yes, that's right. So that's Dakota perfect. Johnson and I, you know, we'll get on the Charlie Love Express. put on our Oculus headsets, and in her eyes, I will be 25.
Yeah, through her lenses. So if you guys could choose to do anything in virtual reality, like in fantasy land, and you put on your headset and you get to go somewhere or do something, what would you do?
Oh, I would go back in time, you know, in all different times, you know, because like like they do on Star Trek with the holodecks.
Right.
You know, where I would go back into Roman times, mm-hmm. you know, and I would, you know, go back to Marco Polo and, you know, stuff like that. You know, just things that you would never experience.
Oh, that's, yeah.
I'm thinking I would want to, you know, this is also Star Trek related, maybe go to a place where I could meet one of those green women that, that Kirk was so into. Yeah. I mean, in virtual reality, that seems kind of safe.
That Captain Kirk, man, he got around.
Yeah. I don't think he was following the prime directive. I think he had a different prime directive.
He was going bravely where no man has gone before.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I think those are great ideas.
Well, you know, so, you know, all this stuff, you know, that's in the future and these things that are happening so fast and everything like that. One of the things that's really kind of cool is that if you go back to our original roots, you know, some of the things that, you know, keep our bodies and minds healthy have been around for centuries. Have they not?
Yeah, well, not even centuries, millennia.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know what a millennia is.
A long time.
Yep. Yep. There was even a body found, a European guy in Asia, like China, and, you know, on a Silk Road, mummified. He was like over 2,000 years old, and he had like, you know, a pound of weed on him. So, I mean, his stuff's been around for a long time. And it not only, you know, do people smoke it, which is why it's been illegal in the United States for a long time, but there's also the hemp plant, which is kind of like a variation of the cannabis plant. And you can't use industrial hemp plants to get high. So there's like this total kind of misnomer, which is unfortunate because the hemp plant is actually great for fiber and to eat. You can use hemp seeds, hemp nuts, and you can turn them into nutritional snacks. You know, the seeds are have essential amino acids, making an ideal source for protein for vegans and raw foodists. You know, essential fatty acids are abundant in the hemp seeds, which are very beneficial to humans. You got magnesium, iron, potassium, great fiber content. And even vitamin E. So, you know, it's just a very nutritious, or is a very great source. It's a great source of nutrition. And it's easy to grow. You get fantastic yields. George Washington used to grow it at Mount Vernon. Hmm. And even, you know, there's a quote out there about, you know, how he really pushed people to use Indian hemp and to grow it and to utilize it. You know, and back then too, they had, you know, a lot more people sailed. So you needed, sails for your ship and rope, great rope. It makes better rope than anything on the market today. But like we've said, it's illegal. You can only grow it in Colorado, Washington, and Oregon at this time. And then most seeds that you get are in Canada. They come from Canada. They import it from Canada.
Yeah, I didn't know that it had so many great qualities about it. But it doesn't surprise me because most plants have a lot of nutritional value to them, you know.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, vegans, right? I mean, that's all they eat is plants.
Well, it's fascinating that cannabis has such a variety of different types of strains of it, of different plants, like because it has such low levels of the THC, it doesn't have anything really like we associate cannabis with the marijuana piece of it, which has that ability to induce the
euphoric feelings.
Right. And
right.
It's a totally different strain of it. So it's interesting that it can be made into so many interesting, valuable kind of.
Yeah, because like
products.
The hemp, the hemp and the marijuana, they're virtually the same plant. One's male, one's female. And the male is the one that has all the nutrients and amino acids and stuff like that. It doesn't have any of the THC in it. With the female plant has the THC in it, and that's the one that people get high on. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, you know, just a different strain of it, you know? And, you know, they've been using this, you know, marijuana and peyote and stuff like that in different cultures, you know, for eons. And it's like, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to the Middle East, but, you know, I've been to the Middle East, and in the Middle East, you know, you can't drink, man. And that's just right. The way it is.
Yeah, they smoke hash. Yeah,
you know, they smoke opium and hash and stuff like that. And that's the norm for them over there. We're over here, drinking's the norm, and you know, opium and marijuana and stuff like that is not the norm, you know. So it kind of depends on, you know, what the culture is,
mm-hmm.
and what they think about it.
Yeah, because like you look at these benefits of all the different products you can do with the hemp, and then you look at the strains of marijuana that are now becoming legal in more and more states. And perhaps it'll be interesting to see if at some point many more states make it legal for marijuana.
Oh, I think you'll see probably half of the country it'll be like the red and blue. You know, the blue states will all be, you know, legalized marijuana, and the red states will go against it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem you have politically is that it's still the United States of America, and it's still federally against the law. See, so that's the federal law. So while things are changing, they're changing slowly.
Right.
To me, it's like with prohibition, right? They outlawed alcohol, and they said, you know, it's no good for you. And what it did was, you know, you had the roaring 20s and all the crimes and the speakeasies and, you know, prostitution and everything that went with, you know, the getting liquor, illegal liquor, right? And it was bad for you, too, because they would make it, you know, and the quality was bad. People would die from it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, after, you know, 10, 20 years of, you know, prohibition, the government finally came to their senses and they said, look, you know, if people are going to drink anyway, whether we make it illegal or not. So let's make it legal. Let's make it, you know, safe to drink and let's monitor it. You know, so now, you know, we don't have gangs selling liquor and, you know, and I think the same thing is going to happen with marijuana. We're not going to have, you know, people hanging around schools selling marijuana. You're going to be able to buy it, and they're going to regulate it, you know, and, you know, they're going to, you know, tax it and things like that.
Yeah.
The difference, depending on who you talk to, is that there are many underground marijuana growers that have been doing it for medicinal purposes and other reasons that have perfected it into being really high quality stuff. And so I have heard the argument that when it becomes legal, it's going to be pounced on by the big corporate kind of like, oh, let's make this a business, and it's going to decrease the value. So it looks like, I mean, they're going to make it expensive and not necessarily have the same regulations on the quality of it. Everyone has their own opinion.
Yeah, everyone,
who knows? Yeah. But it's really interesting to think about all the different ways that it could happen.
It will happen, and the government will get involved with it because they will at some point, you know, regulate it like they regulate alcohol or cigarettes and things like that, you know, and they'll use the money for, you know, whatever, building roads or, you know, for put it back into, you know, schools, or, you know, they'll, you know, use it for, you know, people, you know, a lot of people, you know, say like, you know, taxes are, you know, illegal, you know, and this and that. But then, you know, it's like, hey, don't you drive on the street? Don't your kids go to a public school?
We use the resources.
Yeah, then that's where the tax money comes from, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a cush. And so I think it will be legal, and I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be. You know, I just think it has to go through that period. It has to get over that stigma of where, you know, it had had a bad reputation. You know, and
it has so many different good medical uses, like in terms of, because I have epilepsy, and mm-hmm. it's so interesting to know that for many different kids who have epilepsy, they've actually found strains of the marijuana that doesn't have the THC that has allowed them to be seizure free. And it's the marijuana.
Yeah, and there's so many, you know, interesting things. First was the glaucoma, you know, that really helped glaucoma. You know, and then they discovered, you know, like I'm a big football fan, Cyrus is, and they, you know, when these guys get like, you know, like I wish I had my shoulder injuries, or when people get their head injuries and stuff like that, they always prescribe them oxycodone, which is synthetic heroin, right? And it's very addictive. And then they did a special on 20 Minutes about it, right? And then a lot of the players now are refusing the oxycodone and smoking the marijuana instead. They get the same relief, but they don't get the addictive quality to it. But here's the catch-22. If you smoke the marijuana and you don't get hooked on it and you don't have hangovers and you don't need it, right, you get kicked out of the NFL because it's against the law. But if you take the synthetic heroin, you're okay.
That seems a little crazy.
Yeah, I had a special report on that on CBS this morning. The NFL's Players Association, you know, they're trying to push for, you know, the use of it for NFL for players.
Yeah, for medicinal purposes. That's great.
It would make sense.
And as a stockholder, too, you know, I've invested in Hemp Inc. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, they become one of the leaders as this, you know, becomes legal. And they're actually kind of caught in this, you know, which states it's legal, which it's not illegal kind of limbo right now. They have one of the only processing – well, they have the only hemp processing plant in the country. There's only 5 in the world that can take the hemp stock plant, pull it apart for different uses and like fuel, hemp, paper – rope, you know, things that we've been talking about that you can use it for.
And they've been doing that for centuries.
Right, but there's only one processing plant in the country. They have it.
Right.
You know, so, but it's in North Carolina where it's illegal. Whereas if they had it like in Washington State or Oregon, they would be able to, you know, bring in hemp plants that people have grown locally.
But what we're really seeing here, though, is that everything's going in the right direction. It's just not going as quickly as possible. You know, I mean, and who knows? Maybe at one point you'll be able to buy hemp, you know, using Bitcoin. And
yeah.
Speaking of that.
Well, for that kind of thing, it's art. Because usually when you buy art, you get something physical in return. You know, a print, a painting, a sculpture. And that piece of art, depending on who created it and what happens after you bought it, can become very valuable down the line. You know, talking about investments. Yeah, exactly. I wish I had bought that. Oh, wait, I wasn't alive.
I wish I would have bought Andy Warhol's can of Campbell's soup.
yeah, there you go. Well, there's a young photographer from Yale's Master of Fine Arts program named Sarah Mahoyas, and she has a really creative way of looking at what would happen if you were to invest in the artist instead of the art. She's recently created this new thing called Bitchcoin, and it's a new cryptocurrency. So like Bitcoin, it's virtual and mineable, but it just has one purpose.
Right.
And that is to buy her art.
Oh.
So it's really interesting. So one Bitchcoin sold for $100 is worth 25 square inches of any one of her photographic prints. And this includes all her current and future artwork. And so purchasing at that rate, purchasing a complete print would require about 25 Bitcoins, or which would cost $2,500. So there was an exhibition opening that she did, and she ended up making 200 Bitcoins. So no one person has bought enough to redeem a print. But it's a really interesting idea, because if you think of Bitcoin as a piece of conceptual art by itself, then $100 doesn't seem like a bad deal. But you could also treat it as a future investment in her work. The currency's value, it'll probably fluctuate over time depending on the market. But she said that she eventually wants to create an exchange, or at least hold an auction to determine the future value of it. So it should be really quite... I think it's a great idea. It's not a bad investment.
I think it's a fantastic idea, you know, and I think that's, you know what, if you look back at the ancient times, you know, back when I was, you know, in grade school, the artists almost did something like that. They didn't call it a bitch coin at the time, but when you invested in arts, you got something, you know, from them. You know, when they would create, you know, things for you.
Oh, personalized.
Personalized for you. You know, an example would be like chinaware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then these fancy pieces of chinaware that are exclusively made for you by them, you know, and they would, you know, like put whatever, you know, you wanted, you know, like your family crest on it and things like that. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, well, and then looking at it from the other side, I can totally see the value of that. Then, but something that she said, Sarah Mahoyas, she says, selling artwork has become this mechanized process. At its worst, artists are just stuff producers. This is kind of about artists reclaiming agency. So it really is empowering when you think about the fact that she has the total power over it economically, and she has a way of building that strength in her the value of her work.
You know, I really love that comment that she says that worst artists are just stuff producers.
Mm-hmm. And she's reclaiming agency over it.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, amazing artwork too, just from the picture. I mean, you know, it'd be kind of cool to have that in your house or, you know, in a studio or something.
And it could be an investment. Like you could, let's say you purchased 25 Bitcoins today, but you didn't cash in to actually get anything until later and she produced something. It could be something that pays off. Maybe her work is going to, the value is going to go way up. So.
No, and that makes perfect sense, you know, especially from a financial point of view, that's like buying options in the stock market. Mm-hmm. You buy the option.
Yeah.
That, you know, for so much money, right? And then you're betting that in the future it'll be worth a lot of money. And that's how options work. You buy an option for $25, right? Mm-hmm. And you're holding it for a year and you're betting that in a year's time that stock will be worth $100 a share. And you, by having that option, you get to buy it at $25 a share instead mm-hmm. of $100 and you yeah. get the value. Same thing with the Bitcoin. I really like the idea.
Well, you know, it's interesting because she's smart, Mahoyas. She graduated from the Wharton School of Business, and she was raised in a family full of financial people. And so I think she has some smarts about her with how to deal with this economically and really be pursuing her art.
That's an excellent point, Maya, because, you know, when you were reading the story, you know, and I was looking at it and stuff like that, you know, things that, you know, one, it's a fantastic story and, you know, and it's very sexy and very, you know, entertaining and, you know, it's just a novel idea and everything like that. But I kept thinking in the back of my head, like, someone's put a lot of thought into this. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't just a passing fancy. And then when you tell me, you know, that she's gone to finance school and all this stuff, I'm like, now it's making a lot of sense.
Time is Art with Holly Lorien Adams.
I'm Holly Lorien Adams, and time is art. That statement can be true for many mediums in the art world, and after a short stint with a new medium, I can say that there's an intense reverence that comes to mind for me when I consider the art of glass blowing. Lamp breaking is a type of glasswork where a torch or a lamp is primarily used to melt glass. Once in a molten state, the glass is formed by blowing and shaping with tools and hand movements. It's also known as flame working or torch working, as the modern practice no longer uses oil-fueled lamps. Although lack of precise definitions for lamp working makes it difficult to determine when the technique was first developed, the earliest verifiable lamp worked glass is probably a collection of glass beads dating back to the 5th century BC. In the mid-19th century, lampwork techniques was extended to produce paperweights, primarily in France, where it became a popular art form still collected today. Glass bowing involves three furnaces. Glass bowing differs from lamp work in that you have the first container, which is a crucible of molten glass, and is simply referred to as the furnace. The second is called a glory hole, and it is used to reheat a piece in between steps of working with it. The final furnace is called the lair or annealer, and it is used to slowly cool the glass over a period of a few hours to a few days, depending on the size of the pieces. This keeps the glass from cracking or shattering due to thermal stress. Historically, all three furnaces were contained within one structure, with a set of progressively cooler chambers for each three purposes. Many glass blowing studios in Mexico and South America still employ this method. The glass studio movement began in 1962 when Harvey Littleton, a ceramics professor, and Dominic Labino, a chemist and engineer, held two workshops at the Toledo Museum of Art, during which they started experimenting with melting glass in a small furnace and creating blown glass art. Littleton promoted the use of small furnaces in individual artists' studios. This approach to glass blowing blossomed into a worldwide movement, producing flamboyant and prolific artists. Today, there are many institutions around the world that offer glass making resources for training and sharing equipment. Working with large or complex pieces requires a team of several glass workers in a complex choreography of precisely timed movements. This practical requirement has encouraged collaboration amongst glass artists in both semi-permanent and temporary working groups. As you can tell, the art of glass blowing is indeed time being used as art.
And that's your art and entertainment news.
Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Coming out of my cage and I've been doing just fine. Gotta be down because I want it all. It started out with a kiss, how did it end up like this? It was only a kiss, it was only a kiss. Now I'm falling asleep and she's calling.
Joe Crawford's radio and television show features many names on the A-list, and he's nominated for Best Comedian in 2014. He talks with the president of Just Imagine Inc., Charlie Stanton, in this interview.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another amazingly exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are really, really, really happy to have on as our guest from Canada, is Joe Crawford. He is a comedian. He has a TV show and he has a radio show and he just does it all. And welcome, Joe.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me on. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing unbelievable and it's great to, you know, to finally get a hold of you. Man, we've been looking forward to this interview for such a long time.
Yes. Well, I greatly appreciate it. Yeah, I usually don't do interviews.
Nice. I want to hear about your radio show.
Well, the radio show can be heard on DKRN, and people can find that on my website, joecrawfordlive.com. It's a weekly two-hour talk show that we do where basically almost anything goes on the show. And we'll have guests on, like how you interview guests. Like you have comedians and authors, and we have that as well, along with celebrities. Actually, over the years, we've made some great friends with great celebrities who, within a heartbeat, will do interview with us, no problem. And some of those interviews that are going to be coming up for season 8 are Don Rickles is going to be all
wow.
Springer, Carol Burnett, Wink Martindale. So some great big guests. Those are just some that are lined up. Also got Kenny Rogers and Kenny G, the saxophone player.
Right.
Yes, lots of great guests. I always try to like to bring, I don't know about you, but I always get depressed with all this news that's on the radio, on the TV. All you hear is this bad stuff and killing and nuclear wars and all that stuff that's going on. So we try to bring the news in a lighter format, in a funnier way. And that I think people also appreciate and enjoy as well, because I think they're getting tired of hearing all that bad news around the world that's going on. I know I am.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, most people are, you know, it's like every day can't be doom and gloom, you know? And even if it is, you know, let's take a, you know, the humorous look at it, you know?
No, exactly. And so, yeah, so people can go to my website and check that out. Wednesdays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, and it's broadcast daily. Just don't know, because I always take a hiatus in the summertime. This is the longest hiatus I've ever taken. I've taken a 3-month. Usually I only take a 2-month. But the touring with me performing all around and doing my singing comedy shows. But even being away, my show is still number one on the network, and we have about several shows that are on DKRN. So it's good to know that even though I'm away, the listeners are still loyal and always looking for more listeners to chime in. And we always give away prizes, too. So if they like the Facebook page, go through my website, joecrawfordlive.com. And the same thing kind of happens with the TV show, but it's not a two-hour show. That would be too much Joe for you. But the TV show is basically like a half hour to an hour, depending on the guest and who we have on. But it's just a sit-down interview, and again, we have a, because we're Canadian, we promote a lot of Canadian content. I'm huge promoting our Canadian content. I know for a fact with doing the interviews that I've been doing for promoting about myself being nominated, hardly not one Canadian media outlet hardly wants to do an interview with being nominated with me, which is pretty sad because, I mean, we lose a lot of great Canadians to the United States. And I'm trying to keep Canadians in Canada, even though there's nothing wrong with the States either. But yeah, it's a hard battle to get Canadian energy.
Well, you know, Joe, they call it the brain drain, you know, where people get educated in Canada in very, very fine schools and come work in America. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we're promoting you and you're going to, you know, get this award. And, you know, we here in the United States, we consider Canada the 51st state anyway.
Canada, though, that's the thing, because I love you Americans that are further down south, like Texas and Florida, who drive up, and when they think they hit the border, they're going to see, even when it's July 4th, and it's 100 degrees here, where I'm at, located in Niagara Falls, and they think they're going to instantly see Eskimos and igloos and polar bears and 10 feet of snow. And they're like, where's the snow? And we're like, you got to go up like closer to Alaska area if you want the snow on July 1st or July 4th or whatever, buddy. But because where I live, we're border town, that we just hop over the border. I do a lot of overstate shopping as well and everything because the dollar is great and everything else. And the prices are just right, actually, too. That, yeah, I consider you guys as neighbors, and we're one big happy family, I think, anyway.
I wouldn't take it that far, you know.
Well, not politically, maybe. All right.
But no. It's not that. It's just that, you know, like, you know, for example, I wish we had the Canadian healthcare system, and we don't, you know.
That is true. I have to say, actually, I had a comment, a radio interview actually in Alaska asked me, what's the difference between, because I do a lot of touring down in the States as well, what's the difference between Canadian audiences and American audiences? I'm like, well, American audiences have guns in the audience. In Canada, we don't have the guns. That's a joke. But of course, Alaska, too. It's like nothing. It's like second nature to have for them to have a gun on hand. But no, I mean, you know what, though? But humor, no matter where you are, whether you're in Canada, the States, Australia, United Kingdom, Italy, humor is universal, irregardless. So it is just, if you can make someone laugh, that's all that matters. And if you, like I always say, if I can make one person laugh a day, then my job is done. So.
You know what? You're absolutely right about that. And, you know, you're going to have to get that message, you know, to Justin. You know who I'm talking about, Justin Bieber.
We don't know him, okay?
Oh, wait a minute, dude. He's all yours, man. I mean, his last arrest was in Canada. It was not in the United States.
we're sending him back to Germany to go find his monkey that he left back behind in Germany, okay?
Oh, yeah.
But I got to say, I think you're the only one who probably thinks that you give Justin Bieber more credit than anyone else, really.
Well, you know, he is talented, and I've heard, you know, some of his music, and we've used some of his music on the show, and he you know, if you like that type of music, you know, and then, yeah, then he, you know, he is good. You know, I mean, you know, before he became really famous, you know, he became famous because his music was good. You know, he got discovered. But he's like, you know, a lot of people, you know, but I'm not defending him, but he got, you know, when you get big very early and really young, you know, it goes to your head. You know, it just doesn't matter who
absolutely.
You are.
And do you know who actually discovered him? Usher, and then also Ellen DeGeneres had a hand in that as well.
Well, you know, she has him on her show a lot, so that kind of makes sense. But there's a lot of Canadian exports that came out, you know, like him, like Avril Lavigne, you know. And Alanis Morissette, you know, they're Canadians.
You really know how to pick those horrible singers, don't you?
Well, you know what? They're extremely popular in America. They were extremely popular in America. It's still, Avril Lavigne still is, you know.
Yeah, no, and not surprisingly, too. Like, but I mean, no one talks about Avril Lavigne in Canada. Oh my gosh, that's like talking about Justin Bieber in Canada. That's just like a no-no.
I feel you on that one. So let me ask you, you talked about your radio show, and which, by the way, we would love to be on your radio show at one time. So
absolutely, you. I got your email. We'll have you on from your show as well, and have your listeners chime in and have you on for sure as a guest.
Yeah, that'd be great. But you know, you so you talked about all the big name celebrities that are going to be on your, and they are very big name celebrities. I mean, dude, those are some heavy hitters that you're having on your radio show for the new season. You know, and now that you're going to include us, I mean, like you're in stratosphere now.
Yeah, we are just over the top. We hit like maximum level, and then you gave us like uber maximum with you having me.
I'm telling you, Joe. Now you guys are dreaming.
Yeah. Awesome.
I love the cover for those of our listeners out there. The cover is Dreaming with Joe Crawford, and he's taking a snooze on the moon. And it's really, it looks very cool. I don't know whoever designed it, but it's very cool.
Tell you a little quick story about that. I had my designer, that didn't even come across our head. What I had in my mind was I wanted a moon and whatever else. And like myself with like dreaming of like with some clouds in my head, from my head, the dream bubbles of the family, friends, and music and that. And then jokingly, this is why you got to be careful when you joke. Jokingly, my designer said, well, why don't I just throw you on the moon and make you like Man of the Moon? I'm like, you can do that? And she's like, well, I don't know if I can, but it's not impossible. I'm like, oh, I don't care how impossible it is. We're going to make it happen. And so a little joke came into something that was actually true in reality. And be careful what you wish for, folks, because it could actually happen.
Yeah, really. So the TV show is going to start up again. Tell us about that.
The TV show is on an exclusive network that's through my website on JoeCrawfordLive.com and through YouTube. And it's all embedded on my website. We call it Jig TV and with JTV Productions. And like I said, it's just a half-hour show that we interview. We actually, being in Niagara Falls area, that we have teamed up with the casino that get the acts coming in, like Kenny Rogers, like Kenny G, Sharon Osbourne, and other, I can't think of other names that right now that speak off the top of my head, but that will be coming to the casino to perform and entertain, that we'll be actually doing interviews with those acts, sit-down interviews for about 25 minutes, because it's a few minutes of an intro and a few minutes of an outro. But yeah, just a sit-down interview with them, one-on-one, myself and that guest, and yeah.
There you go. Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time out. You know, we want to remind everybody that they can pick up their CD, Dreaming with Joe Crawford. I highly recommend it. And you can get that on his website, which is JoeCrawfordLive.com. And hey, we look forward to all the brand new projects. You know what? And will you come back on our show after you win the award?
Absolutely.
Nice. Okay, well, we look forward to that.
To learn more about Joe Crawford, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Dinner's ready. Pepperoni!
Mmm, I love it.
And you made it all by yourself? That's our girl.
There is nothing better than a good lie.
Our friend Adele Park several times before, and we're really happy she joins us again during the release of her new audiobook, Gadzooks.
Welcome everybody to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we're really pleased to have on again award-winning author Adele Park, and we are here to talk about her book, Gadzooks, a comically quirky audiobook, When Suicide and Cosmetics Collide. And we all know what happened then, huh? Welcome, Adele.
Hi, Deb. It's wonderful to be back on the show. Just a slight thing that I wanted to bring up. It's actually When Assisted Suicide and Cosmetics Collide. So what we have in my story is a community that is so religious, they can't wait to help their brethren get to meet God in a hurry. And so hence the assisted suicide part of my story.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you're going to be in New York. You're up for an Audi Award on this book, correct?
Yes, that was really an honor for me to be a finalist in the original work category. Of course, this is a very prestigious competition, and I'm not sure what my chances are of actually winning another Audi, but it's just really an honor to have my title listed along next to so many other very worthy titles.
Well, you know, you are just leaps and bounds ahead of so many different authors. I mean, you know, not only have you already won once, you're up again. You know, we all admire your work, you know, and it's really like a breath of fresh air, you know?
Well, thank you. That really means a lot coming from you, especially with your association with Blackstone Audio. And I would like to congratulate you and your associates at Blackstone Audio for all your Audi finalists that you have. I believe you have 4 different titles that are up for Audis this year.
Yeah, we do. So tell us about where you got the inspiration for this, for Gadzooks, this latest version.
I get a lot of crazy ideas when I'm working out in the gym, and I think that Gadzooks was just a product of a lot of endorphins and an imagination that is a little bit quirky. So in my story, it takes place in a polygamous community, as do all of my stories. And they're all satires, and they're all multi-voiced performances. And we do a lot of kind of kooky things. We add in sound effects. We put in music. We do whatever we think will help tell the story.
Yeah, and you do it in an amazing way. I mean, it just you're you know, if I might be so bold as to say, once you start listening to, you know, your book, you know, any of them, they grab you right away, and you're just like you're immediately, you know, part of the group. At least that's how I feel, you know? And you just can't wait to find out what's going to happen next.
Well, that's always a great compliment when someone says that, especially when you're talking about characters like Scotty Sphincter, lead singer of the Rectal Surgeons, who happens to be one of the main characters in Gadzooks.
You know, every time I hear that, the Rectal Surgeons, I just kind of crack up. Where did you come up with that idea?
Well, I think that satire is meant to exaggerate that which is already absurd. So I take things that I think are really whack to begin with, and then I kind of stretch them out a little bit.
Well, you know, for all of us out there, you know, that enjoy your books, you know, all around the world, it's quite, you know, a delight, you know. Because I always look forward to your new, what you're doing next, and what's your next project going to be? Because they're, like you said, they're all wacky, and they're all just like, you know, like, wow, you know, I did not see that coming, you know?
One of the things that I'm engaged in right now is a Facebook experiment to publicize my existing audiobooks. I have a little bit of a background in editing video. And of course, I edit audio. And so what I've been doing is putting out a series of really kooky ads and putting them on Facebook. And so I've been busy in my studio using it in a little bit different way. And I'm getting ready to do another great big shoot. I have the same cast that comes back for my videos. And it's a quirky polygamous family. And we show them doing all these different activities here in beautiful southern Utah. And then we run these as ads on Facebook.
Last one I saw, you know, and I don't want to give it away for, well, you know, for everybody out there, you know, take a look at it. When you were mentioning the Audis and the old dude says like, I thought that was a car, you know,
an Audi.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, that was one of the first things that people said to me when I told them I had been nominated for an Audi the first time. They're like, "You're going to win a car?"
Yeah.
No, not quite, but just as enjoyable as a car. So, I think that the whole Facebook thing is very fascinating. And as you know, being involved with audiobooks yourself, there's a lot of audiobooks out there. So we are all challenged with finding a way to make our particular project stand out among a sea of other projects. So I've taken this idea that people like to watch videos on Facebook while they're killing time at work, and have decided to try and use that as a sales tool. So I've tried to create these funny little ads so that hopefully when people are taking a little break from work, they stumble across one of my ads and maybe it propels them to buy my book.
You know, it's a great idea, and I'm big on that kind of thing. Hopefully you're having good success with it.
And I know that I'm getting a response because I'm getting people liking my Facebook page that have foreign names or are people that I've never met before. And so I think the only way that they're able to find me is through Facebook. So you really can actually measure your progress on Facebook. And it's so simple to use. I'm really pleased with how my experiment's been going so far.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to get a huge following. The books that you do, they are so uniquely, in my opinion, American, you know, that people are going to eat them up all around the world. You're going to find a big following, especially in English-speaking countries like India. One of the ways to break down barriers is through humor, you know, because it takes everybody off the defensive. And that's what you've done with your books. You know, it takes people off the defensive. It lets you enjoy it and see things through a different light, you know, through a new pair of glasses, you know, as it were.
Been the aim of my audiobooks. I hope I don't offend too much, but on the other hand, satire is meant to provoke, and if it gets you to examine your own beliefs, then I guess I've done my job.
And we're going to play a clip from the book.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. On behalf of the entire crew, I'd like to welcome you aboard. We've been cleared for takeoff and expect to crash land outside the polygamous community of Naval, Utah on schedule. We invite you now to sit back, relax, and enjoy the journey. From all of us here, we hope you die laughing.
Heavenly Thoughts from Joseph Stratton.
Utah, it's not just for polygamists anymore. The bureaucrats from my church in Salt Lake City mistakenly thought I went AWOL so I could indulge in more than my fair share of the marital pie. In actuality, it was these dogma-driven blowhards I was trying to shake off. Almost a century after my death, Moon McKenna unwisely tangled with the present-day polygamists living in Zion Flats when she helped one of the girls escape her upcoming wedding to a much older relative.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Although I wouldn't recommend getting arrested for kidnapping a polygamist bride. Normally, I'd rather gouge out my eyes with a red-hot poker than spend my weekends with the boozers and losers who habituate the smoky halls of the Diamonds in the Desert Casino. But I've got two kids to feed and a gay husband to clothe.
The city of Naval outlawed polygamy in 1937. From my perch in heaven, I watched the ugly split between the citizens of Naval and the future residents of Zion Flats. The practice of polygamy went on trial, ending in a hung jury. Those wishing to continue the tradition relocated to Zion Flats. The secrecy pervading their renegade lifestyle has resulted in terrible abuse of women and children, especially those with mental or physical defects. It wasn't until a notorious shock jock named Nancy Neptune yanked open the curtains of the festering situation before anyone from Naval would act on behalf of the victims of Zion Flats.
The lawyers for Orion Radio were going ballistic, claiming that I'd paid an extortion fee for a teenage bride. Oh, please. That pedophiliac from Zion Flats signed a legal document granting Meredith Andrews custody of Isla Ray. Carson is such a farticus. I knew he'd miss the real point, which was that the studio lines were blowing up all night, and we'd saved Isla Ray from having to stroke the newt of some geriatric child molester. Where do these old geezers get all that energy? It must take one hell of a man to keep a barnyard of girls pregnant at all times.
My last journey to the Celestial Kingdom was expedited by 21 of my 22 wives. Nowadays, they'd label my passage to the Celestial Kingdom as assisted suicide, a term I find highly offensive. Nadine Reinhardt McElprang Stratton Viapando understood the concept of compassionate endings better than most. The only mistake Nadine made was in bringing the practice forward in a very public manner.
You never forget your first poisoning, but the decision to return Laryl to Heavenly Father was actually made in council with my sister wives after he was sidelined by the strokes. Growing up in Naval, I had some hazy knowledge about the Masonic Order of Moroni, which nudged people into the celestial kingdom. But it was one of those things, like procreation, that people didn't talk about in polite society.
Old Doc Pinkerton is a real stickler. He was the first to sound the alarm when Nadine Reinhardt McElprang Stratton Viapando Davenport went all helter-skelter by hosting what she calls celestial send-offs.
If the state wants to prosecute Nadine for something, it should be for giving my wife that recipe for agave-flavored popovers. I haven't had a taste of real sugar since Nadine began her barmy crusade to save the citizens of Naval from the pitfalls of pastries. If all that fruity cardboard is so good for you, how come Nadine's rear end is still big enough to dam a river?
And then we want to thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, good luck at the Oddies. And I am like, you know, I'm almost 100,000% sure you're going to win.
That's so kind of you to say. I appreciate all your support. And best of luck to everyone at Blackstone Audio on all your Oddie finalist competitions as well. I'll be clapping for you, and I'll see you guys at the Oddies in New York.
All right, we'll see you in May.
To learn more about Adele Park, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Runaway Man. Benji Golden works in his family's struggling mom-and-pop business above a 24-hour diner on Broadway and West 103rd Street. Golden Legal Services, a private detective agency, was started by Benji's hero cop father. The business is now run by Benji's mother, who used to be the only Jewish pole dancer in New York City, and is staffed by lovely Rita, an eye-popping computer wizard and former lap dancer. Baby-faced Benji, who is exactly 1/4 inch shy of 5'6", weighs 137, and answers to the nickname Bunny, specializes in tracking down teen runaways. One day, when a lawyer in fancy shoes arrives from Park Avenue's classiest law firm offering a job and lots of money, Benji and his mother can't say no. Bruce Weiner is a senior at prestigious Canterbury College. A client of the firm has bestowed a considerable inheritance on Bruce, but Bruce has gone missing, and it's up to Benji to find him. One murder later, Benji finds himself on a dangerous investigation that will take him to the highly secretive core of the most powerful city on Earth. Runaway Man delivers all that a David Handler novel promises. Smart humor, a thrilling and sexy story, and characters you won't soon forget.
Now, let your limbs go heavy. Svet commanded us as she paced back and forth in the basement community room of Congregation B'nai Jacob. Allow the prana to course through your body on this beautiful winter morning. 8 of us had shown up at 6 o'clock on this blustery, not-so-beautiful morning. It was now an hour later and we'd arrived at Savasana, or corpse pose. Our exhausted limbs splayed out on our mats, sweat pouring from us. Russian-born Svet's sunrise yoga class is a grueling workout. But stamina and core strength are important in my line of work. So I drag myself out of bed before dawn 3 mornings a week. Welcome the day, she implored us, her thick accent and commanding bearing, infusing her words with a vaguely martial aura. You will feel peaceful. You will embrace your inner strength. B'nai Jacob is the small neighborhood temple where my dad became a regular after the cancer took hold of him. It's a squat stone building on West 102nd Street, midway between Amsterdam and Columbus, that looks like either an undersized firehouse or an oversized mausoleum. No windows face the street. In the final months of his life, my dad took to attending the minyan service that's held in the basement there every morning at 7:20. I went with him. After he died, I gave it up. We closed out our practice by chanting Om, then opened our eyes and headed up the stairs to greet the new day. The minyan regulars were already filing down those stairs, punctual as ever. A minyan requires no rabbi, just 10 congregants who share a desire to pray or reflect. At B'nai Jacob, it's also a social thing. The regulars coffee clutch for at least an hour. Many are retirees. As they came clomping down the stairs in their dark overcoats and heavy wool scarves, I waited to say hi to them. Morris Cantor and Jerry Granick had both been on the job with my dad. Milt Miller had been his CPA and still handles the books for my mom. Al Posner, a sarcastic old grouch who always smells like pickled herring, was my dad's bookie.
This promising first in a new PI series from Handler, The Snow White Christmas Cookie and 8 Other Berger and Mitri Mysteries, introduces Benji Golden of Golden Legal Services. Benji holds his own with the big shots and a skilled professional killer in this auspicious and amusing debut, says Publishers Weekly. David Handler is an Edgar and American Mystery Award winner and a Dillis Award finalist. He is the author of the Berger and Mitri Mysteries, as well as the Stuart Hogue Mystery Series. He lives in a 200-year-old carriage house in Old Lyme, Connecticut. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Come here, baby. You know you drive me up a wall, the way you make good for all the nasty tricks you pull. Seems like we're making up more than we're making love. And it always seems you got something on your mind other than me. Girl, you got to change your crazy ways. You hear me? Say you're leaving on a 7:30 train and that you're heading out to Hollywood.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineinc.com. I'm Sarah Simerson.
My name's Carson Dench.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there. You turn.